funded through another grant. What else? But all these things are being taken care of today by the IRA Council. You have two different entities that are involved here, and yet there's no communication there.
We got one entity that's, just taking a ride. We're riding a horse. We're the horse. We're the moose.
You asked if we got any assistance from the state. We don't get any assistance from the state, and we belong to the Kenai Borough, and the Kenai Borough don't even help us maintain our roads. We built our own roads with our own money, and we have a state trooper here that tries to run our roads. I don't know how the state can run our roads, because the state don't help us maintain our roads, or the borough, or nobody. And that's a funny situation to me. I really don't understand it, because the state don't help us maintain our roads, and the borough don't help us maintain our roads.
Well,
and
if you belong to the Kenai Borough, what does all that mean? Is it just the fact that on the map you're within the borough, or do you pay taxes to the borough, or do they give you services, or what? Do they run the school?
We don't get anything. They run the school, but they don't give us any service of any kind. And we were conned into the Kenai Borough too, and there was only about half a dozen people here in the village when they came over, asked them to vote to join the Kenai Borough. Because all the rest of the people were down in fish camps fishing, and there was only about half a dozen old people here conned them into joining the Kenai Borough.
What year was that?
I forgot what year it was.
Well, was it after ANCSA or before ANCSA?
No, it was before. You're here gathering this information. After you get done with it, what do you do with it, and where does it go?
Well, I'm gathering this information for the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People. That is, they're two international Native peoples organizations. And because the Alaskan settlement was a center of international attention back in 1971, a lot of Native people in other countries are interested in what happened. How did it work out? Are you happy with it? Was it a good thing? Was it a bad thing? So I have been traveling around the state holding meetings, and I'm going to write a report that will be made public in the summer of 1985. The Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People will submit my report to the United Nations, but I will send a copy to everybody who's testified. That includes all of us around the table today. And I hope it, and I will make recommendations based on what you've told me, what you and people at other meetings have told me. And I hope those recommendations will be helpful to Alaska Natives in deciding what they're going to do. And I'll also be making recommendations to Native people in other countries so they can learn from what happened here. So that's my job. That's what I'm doing.
Tell them not to do it unless they want one big giant corporation. They don't have no control over it.
Yeah, do you want to enlarge on that, Mr. Stanifer? Or I didn't quite follow that.
I said, tell them don't do it unless they want one big corporation, one big giant corporation they have no control over. And my final statement, not final, but then I will talk later, but the only thing I have to say right now is ANCSA is a termination of Natives and their land, so we can all be equal. Natives can't be equal. They're different. That's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, thank you.
What happens to the children that are born after 1971? What do you call them?
Well, what you have to decide is this: if you want those children to be part of the whole land claim settlement, then do you arrange to issue shares to them so that the children all get 100 shares in the village corporation and 100 shares in Siri? Or if you turn the land over to the IRA, then the children become members of the IRA and participate in that way? Or do you work it out in some other way? Do you establish a trust so that the children can be owners of the land in perpetuity along with everybody else? This is one of the things every village I've been to, and I've been to 45 villages before I came here, everybody's unhappy about the fact that children born since 1971 are left out.
Because like I stated earlier, a lot of our young people are right now concerned about what's going to happen after 1991. And yet these same young people are ones that are getting involved. They're asking to have in the school to have a Native land claims class so that they can become educated in what 1991 means. They on their own have started up their own groups, such as the peer counseling, where they're trying to help their own in dealing with problems like drug and alcohol. So you have young people like this who are really concerned, who are voicing their opinions, who are getting involved, and yet those same children after 1971 don't really have anything. And yet they're a part of the community. They're a part of the state. They're a part of this whole thing that we're involved in. Who are they to turn to? Except to the leaders in the village, or, you know, to get out on their own and start making these things known to the people. They have a future that they have to build for themselves. Mm-hmm. And with all the confusion that you have now with the Native land claims and the corporations and whatnot, they're left out there.
Yeah. You want to say something?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah, well, Mr. Bismarck.
Just wait till we get through. just like when I went to the fishery. They stated in the fishery hearing that this village don't have no rights to fishing on this beach. They don't have no leases, nothing. And they talked about people should get the leases so they don't go to the fishery. I thought we were taking a rest.
Bobby, maybe we can start with you to
kind of
get things going.
If you want to come over and sit here, Bob, and just sit down there. Do you want to come and sit here?
Okay, there. She's scared. Hey, you go first.
I'll go first.
Okay.
My name's Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and we're just holding this little meeting to find out what people here in Tyonek think about ANCSA. And we have been talking already this afternoon with Bonnie McCord and Fred Bismarck and Frank Standifer about their views of the land claim settlement. They were telling us about the way the town is governed, that it used to be a reservation. Now the Village Corporation owns the land. People have shares in the Village Corporation and in Siri. We were talking about 1991. As you know, the land is controlled by the corporations, and after 1991, people will be able to sell their shares in the corporations, and so outsiders will then be in a position to take over the corporations and the land. But that means that if people sell their shares in 1991, they'll get some money for their shares, and they'll be able to buy a, depends what the shares are worth, they might be able to buy a truck or a snow machine or something. Anyway, we're really here just to find out how people feel about ANCSA, about the land, about subsistence, and about these questions. You just want to give me your name and just tell me how you feel about it or what thoughts have been going through your head. That would be fine.
Okay, my name is Bobby Span. I'm a high school student. And I don't know too much about this ANCSA, but I feel that we should have classes in our school to get more educated about this subject. I think that it should be that the corporations and maybe some leaders in the village should try to get a program, an ANCSA program down here to educate us about this subject. And I feel that the stocks that we have now, I've talked with the students, some of the students in the high school, and they feel right now that they're now trying to get educated. They're getting interested in this right now. And they feel that we really shouldn't sell our stock because they kind of understand that whoever controls the stock really controls the land. And if you don't control the land, then you don't have subsistence to, because subsistence in this village is the way we live right now. We have to go out and hunt and fish to live because we don't have cars around the next corner to go to the store and buy the food you need to live on. And if you sell your stock, it's gonna, the money that you get is gonna maybe last you about a year or so, year, couple of years, over how long you can keep money, but subsistence, it'll last you for the rest of your life if you control the land.
Well, that was a very well said, and maybe you should be giving the course over there for the school. But thank you very much. Do you want to pass it on to the next victim?
My name is Eugene Trenton. I'm a high school student. I don't know much about this either, but all I wanted to know is ask you a question. If we sell our stocks, does that mean new outsiders can come into our village?
Well, the way Congress set it up was this. They said these corporations will have native shareholders for 20 years, but after that, native people can sell their shares. And that means that if some big company wanted the land here, they might try to take over your village corporation by buying out the shares. And if enough people sold their shares, they would it would mean that control over the corporation would be held by outsiders, and they would also own the land. Now, you're asking me if that means outsiders could come in. I think that's something that you have a court case about right now, and so I wouldn't want to try to answer that question until that court case is finally decided. I've been traveling in the bush for a while, but I think that court case isn't decided yet. If it has been, tell me. I'd like to hear what the result was.
If they take the land, what will they do to the
Well, it depends. If your corporation happened to have a big bank account and a lot of money in the bank, they might decide to try to take over the corporation to get control of the bank account. If you're, you've got valuable land and it's, let us say, oil-bearing land, then they might try to take over the corporation to get the land. It depends if what they think you've got that is worth something. Now, maybe they think, well, this place, there's nothing here. Let's just leave them alone. They don't have anything we want. But I think that if your corporation holds stocks and bonds, as it does, that are worth something, an outside corporation might say, well, how much will it cost us to buy up a majority of shares? And if we can make a profit, because we then own the treasury, we then own all those stocks and bonds, or we own the land, well, then they'll probably go ahead and do it. So the question is this, Bobby put it very well. He said, well, if you sell your shares, you'll get some money for it and be able to spend it on something. On the other hand, if you sell your shares, you will give up. If enough people sell their shares, you give up the land, in essence. So that's the dilemma that was created by this legislation. But Congress in 1971 thought they were doing the right thing. They thought that would be the best thing for Alaska Natives. That's why they did it. Now, I'm going around to find out how you feel about it. Is that the way you'd like to see it all come out, or do you think, clearly the ones that have spoken today think that the land should stay in Native hands? But anything else you'd like to add?
Did you give us your name?
My name is Chris King.
Okay. I'd like to say something about 1971 when they cut the stock distribution between the people who wasn't born after that was born after 1971. I feel that because the corporations or the government gave us the shares for being born into a tribe, that they just handed the shares over to us and we didn't have to do anything to really get it. And I feel that the younger generation right now that don't have these stocks, they might, I think it's a 1/4 blood quantum. There might be somebody over here that has only 1/4 blood, a native in him. And there might be somebody over here who's full-blooded, and they should have as much right as a person over here because they're more native and they should have some voice in, with the stocks. And even though if we give the younger people stocks, even though it'll decrease the money that we get from our stocks. Wait.
I follow you. You mean if you decide that you should share the wealth with the kids born since 1971, that means your shares are worth less, your stocks are worth less, because if you issue more stocks, then the existing stocks decrease in value.
Yeah, and when it decreases, we just give them our decrease, and we really didn't have to do anything to get these stocks. We should share it with people who are natives too, rightfully natives. And,
yeah. If you issue those stocks after 1971, would that make the corporation more stronger or less in its power?
Well, I don't think it would make that much difference. If you issued shares to this children born since 1971, there'd be more shares and it might be a little harder to take it over. But I don't think it would make any great difference. The problem is that under corporation law, you're not allowed to issue shares unless the people that get the shares pay for them. So that means that if you try to issue shares to the children born since 1971, they have to pay for them. Well, they're only children. They don't have any money. So how are they going to pay for the shares? That's another problem ANCSA creates, because it's based on corporation law. And so that has to be gotten around. But I'm really just interested in how you people feel about it, and I gather that, certainly the students feel that the children should, the children who didn't get chairs because they were born too late should participate equally. That seems to be the...
There also seems to be a little conflict in families because there might be a son or a daughter that was born before 1971 and they got stocks. And there might be another family member inside that family that was born after 1971 and they didn't get any stock, and there might be a little jealousy between the two people inside their family.
Yeah. We got another student here.
Don't let the law fool you, kids, because you can always amend the law. You get enough people behind any law, you can always amend it.
I'm sure that's good advice. There's another young fellow here. Would you like to say something?
But I wanted to give you to maybe voice your opinion on how you feel the Native Land Claims has been since you've been in the village. I mean, since 1971. Mm-hmm. If you could come up here, maybe...
We can take the mic over there.
Oh, okay. Fedora has been one of the most influential elders that has been involved with the subsistence fishing and teaching our children their traditional songs and way of dances and everything. So her say on this, to me, is really important.
Well, we've been here ever since 1934. I've been here, I wasn't born and raised here, but when this Native Land Claim came, we all fought for it, and we got it, and now it seems like it's going to backfire on us next. Mm. We all live on subsistence. We can't afford to go to a store and buy our store. Before, when we came here, there was no con or store meat, nothing. We never used to even eat chicken. Now since this, when they struck oil here, that's when they start barging some meat in here and all kinds of store meat. Before we had nothing, that's all we used to leave off is the land. That's all we used to do. We used to put up some fish, can some meat whenever we get it, to put it up for the winter. They used to go hunting right after fishing. As soon as the moose season opened, they go moose hunting. And just if they get meat, they bring it home. And we didn't have no way to keep it for the rain. And with lucky things, can sealer and cans came out. We can our meat and save it for hard time. Same as the fish, we salt them and we can it, we gotta put it, the only way we could save it. We're just lucky these kids are born nowadays. They don't have a hard time to eat. Them days they used to have a hard time. And sometimes they barely get moose. Sometimes it takes them a long time for them to get moose before they get something to eat over here. And when they do get something to eat, then they go divide it amongst the peoples. And now it's not so hard as it was before, because some of them got trucks. Before, they used to only use the motor and dory, that's all they used to go down to the rivers. We lived on everything, ducks, moose, fish. We have to put some away for the winter all the time. And now it's lucky you could go to town and get meat. And if you're hungry, you can't even go out in the woods to go get them. Every place you go, there's game wardens or somebody else watching. Only time since you go out when you go and moose season open or duck season open. Before it was in like that, and it was better leaving long time ago than nowadays now. That's how we were brought up. We wasn't brought up on moose meat, and it's gonna be hard on us. I don't know how long I'm going to live. Yes. This new generation is the one that's going to hit it hard, I guess. Not like that Chris there. He don't know how to talk for himself. He wasn't born and raised here. He was born in Anchorage and he was raised in Anchorage. This couple of years ago, he come down here. He don't even know how to hunt, I don't think. I don't think anybody teach him how to hunt. And they like to eat dry fish. Every time they get hungry for dry fish, they come to my house and ask me for dry fish. That's my sister's grandchildren. Now they all coming down to go to school here and they don't know nothing. And they're the ones that think gonna hit it hard. They don't teach them nothing. Where she used to teach bilingual in school, teach them how to put up fish, tell them about how we put up fish, tell them how they used to hunt moose. And now some of them, the one that's been the bilingual, some of them still got it in their head. I don't know what else to say.
Well, thank you very much.
May I add to that a little bit?
Yeah, please.
One of the things that Fedora brings out is one of the points that I brought out earlier is a sense of sharing in the village. And the need there is there of trying to teach the younger people how to hunt, how to live off subsistence, because this is a part of their culture, this is a part of their traditional ways. And to them, that's a very important phase in life that we have to pass on to the generations after us. And it's within this last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, the elders have really become involved in trying to do exactly that, in teaching the younger people the importance of their native life, by teaching them the songs, the dances. And also in this past year, this past summer when we had subsistence fishing, there were more young people that were learning or questioning, how do you do this as far as putting up your king salmon? What do you do with it? These are all values that we feel are really important to this next generation. Otherwise, a lot of our cultural ways are going to be no more. Cindy, did you want to? You're not ready? We have Don Stanifer, who is also a member of the council. And Donald, I don't know if you're ready.
I'm not really ready, but I'll say some things here. For the record, my name is Don Stanifer, and I'm here to attend a hearing as a personal individual representing no one, just myself and my own interest. I think to relate to what I just heard Fedora talking about, and how does that relate to the land claims, and how does it relate to the future of the people in the village of Tyonek, is that in the land claims during his passage, one of the things was that all natives will relinquish any rights and claims to their Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights. I see that as one of the things that was stuck in there. And as a result of that, they came up with a thing called subsistence for rural residents. And that is not only for native people, but all people that's living in rural areas. And I think that's one way that to quickly eliminate any of the native hunting and fishing rights in Alaska is to use the subsistence in the place of Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights. It was testified earlier by Fedora that in the past there was hardly any pressure, if any. The people around here didn't really recognize the state of Alaska as having any type of authority simply because the state never came around and we never interfered with them, they never interfered with us, and then it continued on like that. As things start developing in Alaska and you start get more hunting and fishing pressures, the state of Alaska is have grown richer and richer, and it's starting to enforce more and more of their laws in the rural areas. And so therefore a lot of the natives are coming to be displaced by the increase in pressure. Another thing that was really was talked on earlier was the 1991 issue. I feel very serious, serious considerations need to be considered as far as the newborns or afterborns that was after 1971. For example, I have four children right now, and not one of those four children are eligible to participate in my corporation. I perceive that as totally causing dissension in the village and causing untrust. And I see it as in the future the village would be hardly work together in the future because of those things. For example, my children in the future after I'm gone, or I should say my grandchildren, if they don't inherit no stocks, they'd be trespassers on my land. And as far as trespassing is going right now, the if the corporation wanted to eliminate all trespassers, they could eliminate myself also.
And shareholders can be trespassers, you say?
Yeah. And I think many of the people here in the village and elsewhere don't consider them trespassers to a corporation that they own or supposedly own. For example, we had already had one case where a village member, also a member of our corporation, was attempting to build himself a log house here in the village, and was ordered to stop, and or possibly face some charges of trespassing. We also have the 14C. Three land reconveyances that supposed to go to the municipality or the state in trust until you form a municipality, if none exist. To me, this is also taking of native lands, because this village right here was built with tribal monies and with tribal blood, sweat, and tears, if you want to call it that. After the land claims passed, under the land claims law, you have to turn the core townships into a municipal type of government or turn it into the state and trust until there is one formed at a future date. To me, the village have lost the native village of Taunik, IRA council. The tribe has lost a great asset, and that is by no means settled at this time, but we don't perceive it as the law is just in trying to take our land from the tribe. It also, the land claims, as far as the IRA is concerned, took many assets from our tribal government in ways of taking the whole former reservation, which is 26,000 some odd acres, without the tribal's consent, which is states right in our constitution, is that before any taking of lands, the tribes must give their consent. And when the land claims came, everybody was allowed to vote, and they did not recognize the tribal government at all in this. As a matter of fact, it came up a time or two whether the tribal government still existed when we still had millions of dollars worth of assets and investments. It was still unclear to the council and to the tribe what place did the IRA have in all this land claims. Many of the leaders back then thought that the land claims would enhance the tribal government. And there was promises of land and money, and it was told to me personally. That's why I voted for the land claims when I was 18 years old. Told me that I'd receive a great amount of land and a great amount of money. No one ever did tell me that they was going to take the subsurface minerals like oil and gas and gravel and give it to another corporation called the Regional Corporation. Nobody told me that the village corporation would consist only of those people born before 1971, and that new people wouldn't participate thereafter. No one ever told me about the state of Alaska enacting their eminent domain powers and compensate or condemn or purchase through fair market value native land for the best interest of the state, of which they had no jurisdiction previously. No one ever told me that we're going to have to form a municipality as specified in the land claims law. If all those things were brought to my attention, and if the tribe voted on, as we always vote on everything, you know, we usually get really knowledgeable before we take into anything into consideration, I would never have voted for it. However, I do recognize that the land claims was was a necessity. It had to be, simply because of all the taking of the native lands before 1971. One thing that I am aware of is that the village back in the 60s was really concerned about the federal government and the IRA, simply because the federal government had too much strings attached to the IRA and was basically making trying to force the IRA to do what they told them. And one example was that when we were a reservation, the federal government, Department of Interior, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, leased the former Meraki Reservation to oil companies without the tribe's consent. Only after the tribe took them to court and won that they finally allowed the Taonic people to participate in the bidding procedures and the negotiations for those oil leases. To go on a little further, there's a great concern about the eminent domain concept of the state of Alaska. Recently, I've read a newspaper where the state is taking and doing studies into all the rivers that has sports fish, high sports fish interests, to look into the feasibility of opening all the river banks up to public access for the public people in the best interest of the state. And included in all of those plans are most of the native lands. I have a great fear that the big take is on now. Now they got all the native questions answered. They have everything set up with the state charter corporations, which the state has control over. And now the big take is going to be coming on in ways of coal development, in ways of resource development, in ways of fishery development, so on and so forth. I perceive that there's going to be many access corridors taken by the state under their eminent domain powers for the specific purpose of opening it to the public, because it would be in the best interest of the state. And the fisheries in particular, I swear, where the pressure is coming now, where they are in the process of planning on taking access amongst all those stream banks. The coal and other energy companies that will be working with the state is going to have a high influence in the state and the lawmaking. I could see right in our own area where the possibilities are that access areas will be running right through our land to a possible shipping point. I ain't saying these things will happen, however I see the possibilities of them being there. And it's already specified in a lot of the regulations by the Department of Natural Resources on acquiring access to ports or to access of the public getting from point A to point B. The Department of Interior, before the land claims, have stated that the tribes would not lose any of their powers, that whatever powers they had shall be retained. We presently are involved in a lawsuit over one of our laws. And our opponents are saying that the land claims have ended all the rights and privileges we enjoyed before the land claims. Certain politicians are saying that the land claims ended the relationship we had with the U.S. government, and that it's up to the state governments to to address the concern of tribal sovereignty. In my opinion, that's one of the biggest insults that U.S. government representative could say to Indian tribe. History has shown itself over and over again that the biggest enemy of any Indian tribe is the state governments because of the equal protection clause. And whereas opposing, I'm in a different views that the federal government in its constitution has provisions to deal with native governments. That's why they have that special relationship. I also have great concerns on the stockholders themselves in ways of lawsuits, divorces, defaults in mortgages or loans. And things of that nature. I could see very soon where there's going to be, and it's already happening, that people will be suing for debts, and you could lose your stock in that fashion. There'll be people getting divorced from a non-native a non-native married to a native person that has stocks. They could claim the stocks. Now you see where death of one spouse.